Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Wellness Ultimatum Radio Show. I'm your host, Omar Cumberbatch. And today we're going to switch gears a little bit from what we've been doing for the last few weeks. I've had a lot of shows regarding consciousness and mindset and just overall away from the health and wellness kind of component where we're talking about diet and exercise. Our guest today is definitely going to touch a little bit about mindset and getting right with our food and our relationship with food, but it's not in the same categories that we've been doing for the past couple of weeks. Our guest today is Michael Temez, and he is a certified holistic health coach and the author of Transformative Nutrition, The Ultimate Guide to Healthy and Balanced Living. Michael is going to tell us his story about how he was obese, had severe sleep apnea, high blood pressure, advanced gum disease, and a lot of resentment for himself, and he was able to completely turn his life around. In fact, Michael lost a staggering amount of weight. He lost 100 pounds, and he's going to tell us all about his journey. Not only did he reverse his adverse health conditions, but he also transformed his dysfunctional relationship with food, his lifestyle, and his higher self. Michael, welcome to the show. I'm so happy to have you.
Thank you so much, Omar. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Great, great. And I didn't mean to sell you a little bit short because I know you're definitely a mindset guy. I've just been dealing with a lot of guests lately who have just been strictly about like consciousness and meditation and stuff of that nature. And I know that you dabble in a lot of that stuff to get your overall health and wellness in check. But I know that, you know, one of the things that I was drawn to especially was your, I mean, unbelievable weight loss story. And I know that the audience is going to appreciate that a lot. So just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got onto this path of health and wellness.
Yeah, sure. I was always an active and healthy kid, and I played sports in high school and everything. And then I got to a point in high school where I met a girl. Long story short, I met a girl, fell in love, and she had a child, and I raised it for a year, and I thought it was mine, and I found out she was cheating on me the whole time, and the child wasn't mine. So basically, that relationship ended, and it created a very deep and dark, depressive state of being for me. For about 2 years, I started stuffing my face and eating just whatever, junk food, fast food, fried food, and I put on weight, and I put it on fast. Within the course of about 2 years, I gained a lot of weight, probably about 70 or 80 pounds. And I just kept getting heavier and heavier, and I really didn't care about what I was doing or what I was eating or how I was living. And then all of a sudden I started falling asleep during the day. I was falling asleep at work. I even fell asleep while driving a company car at one of the places I worked at, and I ended up getting fired for it. It's a long story, but they put me on medical leave and everything. But I went for a sleep study because I was really scared for my life. You know, I was only 20 at the time and I didn't know what was going on. So the doctor suspected that I had sleep apnea. So, you know, he sent me for a sleep study and it came back that I definitely did have severe obstructive sleep apnea, which is basically when you wake up gasping for air during the night many times. Like, I think my report was like over 100 times an hour or something. It was really scary.
Wow.
And yeah. And then I also had he diagnosed me with high blood pressure as well, as you were saying. So I was given the choice between, I could have had surgery, which is they do a procedure when you have sleep apnea, and they make an incision in your throat and they widen your esophageal passage so air can get through more easily, so you don't choke during the night. So there was that, and then the other option was to sleep with a CPAP machine, which is a machine that forces air down in your mouth all night so you don't wake up choking and you get a full night's sleep. So I chose the CPAP machine, and I slept with it, and I got amazing sleep, but I continued my sedentary lifestyle and my terrible diet of fast food and junk food, and I literally was eating fast food like three times a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and drinking soda all day long. I really got into a bad spot in my life because of the relationship. Funny thing is, I didn't even realize that that was causing me to eat the way I was until later on along the way. And it was really difficult for me to understand that. But I made a New Year's resolution in the end of 2000 because it got to the point where I was almost 250 pounds and I was getting winded, going upstairs, even bending over to tie my shoes. And it was like, okay, this is, that's enough of this. I got to do something because I'm only 21 years old at this point and it's not looking good for me. And so I made a resolution and I started working out, and I didn't see much weight coming off at first. And then my dad gave me some words of encouragement. He bought me a boxing suit and some gloves. He had a punching bag. So I started punching the bag, and I went like 3 rounds and I had it all timed out and everything. And I started really sweating. And then a couple months into it, you know, I started seeing the weight coming off, and then I started going on bike rides and then also doing other kinds of outdoor activities as well. And then probably by about August or September, I had lost 70 pounds of that year, and I was feeling amazing. And I started researching, and just, I became a sponge. I became just a researchaholic for anything nutrition, wellness, you know, healthy living related, lifestyle, related transformation stuff. And I just took in everything I could. And ever since then, you know, I just kept learning and learning and learning and learning. You know, over 10 years, I had lived, you know, I had kept this weight loss off, the 70 pounds. And then I got to a point where I didn't even realize that I was still overweight. And just recently, within the last couple of years, I lost an additional 30 pounds. So altogether, it's 100 pounds that I lost since I started the health journey that I was on. But it's interesting, the whole concept of how the mental-emotional attachments can really create physical imbalance, because it wasn't until like 4 years or so, even after I lost the 70 pounds, I had a really bad relationship with women. I was really bitter and angry towards women because of what happened to me in that relationship when I was 17 years old. And it didn't really occur that was why I had, you know, lived the way I had and ate the way I ate. And when it did, then I realized, oh, okay, it's because of that. I'm not stuffing my face because I'm hungry. I'm stuffing my face because I'm pissed off. I'm sad. I'm angry. I'm holding on to resentment and anger from that relationship. And until I understood that and let it go, then that's when I was able to move forward with my life and actually manifest an amazing relationship that I'm in now and actually lose that additional 30 pounds. So it's amazing, the whole interconnectedness of how, you know, our mind, body, and spirit all are one. It's amazing. So I mean that's the gist of my story of how, where I was and where I am now.
No, it's definitely an amazing story that you do have. I was just wondering if you had like that, you know, aha moment where you made the connection between like your relationships with women and your relationship with your lifestyle. Was it something that triggered that and you just put, you know, it just clicked at some point?
It was through a lot of personal development and self-help courses and work that I went through over the course of several years. So it's not something that I just kind of, you know, it wasn't like a light switch kind of thing. It was more like a gradual shedding of all the baggage that I was holding on to. It was like, okay, all right, I just launched a garbage bag off the truck. Okay, I'm a little lighter now. Okay, a couple months later, a year later, oh, there's a couple more bags. Okay, I'm getting closer. So, you know, and eventually all the garbage was gone, and, you know, it was like, you know, cool. It was all good then.
No, that is interesting how that actually, you know, it's over the course of time that you actually did this. And I'm glad that you did bring up the New Year's resolution, because it's definitely coming up. A lot of people are going to be gunning for, you know, all these different resolutions that they have. Now, you did mention to me, as far off the air, that this actually was something at least that triggered you to going into this kind of lifestyle change. What was the easiest thing to change, and what was the most difficult?
The easiest, though, well, I'll start with the most difficult. I'll tell you what, it was giving up soda and all the junk food that I was eating, you know. And I kid you not, and people are becoming aware of this now, they are putting addictive substances in the foods, and it is well known right now. People are waking up to this. It's all over the place on social media. The chemicals, these people are being exposed, I'm telling you. I was addicted to fast food. I was addicted to soda. That was the hardest thing to eliminate from my diet, hands down.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't anymore struggle with it, but for years I would pass by like a McDonald's, or my favorite was Taco Bell, and there was this restaurant that we had called Checkers, and that was my favorite. And I would pass by them all the time. Oh man, I can really go for a Champ burger right now, or a Whopper or something. You know, it's like, man, you know, it's like this. I don't know. It's like almost subliminal. They put this in your mind that it just stays with you. You know, you grow up with this crap food, and it's like it becomes like part of you or something. They know this. I don't know how, but it's crazy. But that was the hardest thing by far.
And how much soda were you drinking? I know that you did mention it on your blog. Yeah. Can you just tell the audience how much it actually you were drinking?
About 2 liters a day. So,
wow.
You know, yeah, that's, what is that, like 60 ounces, something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
It was a lot. Yeah, I would order in the morning. I would do the fast food meal, and I would get an extra, like, hash brown order, and I would supersize it on top of it. So it was like I had the 40-ounce soda, and then I had the hash brown and another hash brown, and then I'd order, like, another bagel or something. It was crazy.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. No, yeah. You know what? That was one of my things, too. I used to absolutely be addicted to soda, and it was one of those things, like, every time I had dinner, I had to have a soda, even if it had to just stop what
mm-hmm.
I was doing, run to the gas station and get soda. It was just something that not only was addicting, but it became habitual, because I just, like, every dinner and soda were, like, one. And
exactly.
I know that you've had situations like that. What is, like, some of the common struggles that happen over the course of actually changing your lifestyle? Just because I know, like, everybody likes to hear the great story that you present and just all the great inspirational stories of people who lost a lot of weight. Like, what are some of the things that you can expect or just tell people that they should expect when they're going to make this transformation?
That's a great question, Omar, because I was actually going to talk about that. And my biggest suggestion or my biggest thing would be to say, don't focus on the big goal, because it's overwhelming and it's daunting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have that goal right there. Keep it in mind. Keep it there. Know that, you know, your ultimate goal. But have small, easily attainable, realistic goals that you can focus on right now. Because if you say, okay, I want to lose, for my, you know, situation, say, for example, I want to lose 70 pounds. That's overwhelming for a lot of people to think that, you know what I mean? But when
mm-hmm.
you say, for this month and for this month only, I'm going to commit to going to the gym, I'm going to commit to learning some nutrition stuff, I'm going to commit to working with a trainer or a health coach, I'm going to commit to eating better, I'm going to commit to my health because it's worth it and it's an investment, because without my health, then no amount of money in the world can make a difference. So having a goal in a month saying, I'm going to commit to all this and lose 5 to 10 pounds or whatever, a small amount, and, you know, reaching that one goal, then you get to that one step, and then you create the next goal, and it, you know, it could be similar or whatever, a little different, and then you get to that step, and you start building blocks or steps up to, you know, the big goal of 70 pounds, and once you get to that big goal, you look back at all the steps that you created, and it's like, oh, wow, that was an interesting and incredible journey, and I let myself experience that journey and didn't try to, like, rush through the process, because a lot of the time when we're on a journey like that, we kind of try to get to the end goal and not enjoy
mm-hmm.
the journey, you know, not enjoy the process, all the stuff that comes up and stuff that you have to deal with, that, you know, a lot of the time when you're going through something like that, it's like, oh, I don't want to deal with this, but you kind of have to, because that's when you have breakthroughs and can really experience transformations in your life and health, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. And the reason I bring this up, too, again, thematically, because it's New Year's and everything, and I know the first thing when I deal with clients with New Year's, they want to do every single thing. They want to
mm-hmm.
go to the gym 5 times
exactly.
a week. They want to cut all the sugar. Granted, they've never gone into a gym in their lives at this point or haven't in years, and they really want to get back into it. Like, do you tell people to tackle, like, certain things first? Do you have a particular approach, maybe even if you draw some of your own experience in your weight loss? Did you go to the gym first? Did you say, okay, you know what, I'm going to cut back on this first? Or did you jump in fully yourself?
It was a combination of both, actually. But for most people, a lot, you know, it's really difficult to have the cold turkey, all or nothing kind of approach because, see, the thing is, what happens, what I've noticed with my personal experience and the people, the clients that I've coached, is that there's this thing called ego, and it doesn't like change. And it gets very agitated when you try to change something around because it's so used to the cycle that's been created and lived in for so long, you know, the cycle of the soda and the fast food and everything. So when you try to break that cycle and create a new healthy one, oh, no, the ego doesn't like that. So it's gonna get, a lot of the times what will happen is it gets spiteful. And, oh, you want to jump into this and you want to go at it full force? Okay, well, go ahead. 2 weeks down the road, then you're like, okay, man, I'm really craving pizza or French fries or this or that. And it's like, you know, when you totally deprive yourself when you're used to having something, it's really hard to deny that you are craving it. For example, if you go into the New Year saying, so I want to stop eating pizza, French fries, and stop drinking soda, and I want to lose 30 pounds. And then if you go to the New Year saying, I'm quitting all those three things and I'm going to go to the gym every day, that's my goal. Okay, that's great if you have the motivation and you have the accountability to make that happen. That's great. But a lot of the time people, you know, they have busy work schedules, they are raising kids, they got a lot of stuff going on, and life comes up, and then, you know, it's like, okay, well, but then a lot of the times people choose convenience over putting the effort into getting to that goal. So instead of saying, I'm going to stop doing all those three things and go to the gym every day, I tell my clients to, like I said, create smaller goals and saying, I'm going to let myself be human. And I'm going to start adding in things one at a time. You know, like, for example, I'm going to start going to the gym as often as possible. Like setting a goal, you know, setting a realistic goal, saying, okay, I'm going to go 2 to 3 times a week. Let's start with 2 and see if we can do 3. And then from there, building on that and saying, okay, well, I'm going to start drinking more water and see if I can crowd out all the soda that I'm drinking. Because a lot of time when you add in stuff and they'll try to limit, because when you start trying to limit things, that's when the ego gets pissed off and says, okay, well, you want to do that, I'm going to spite you, and I'm going to, when no one's looking, you know, you try to sneak in that soda or something, or if someone's trying to quit smoking, they, you know, they go and smoke cigarettes and try to hide it, but you really only, you know, you're only fooling yourself with something like that. So basically what I'm saying is, instead of jumping in completely, like, head on, you know, maybe having a little bit more of a gradual easing into, because in my experience, when you do that kind of approach, it has a longer lasting, permanent effect, because you're easing into it and you're not depriving yourself of what you know, you're craving. I mean, it's a natural feeling that comes up when, you know, you have these kind of cravings, and I dealt with it. I see my clients deal with it, and to deny someone of it is just making the situation worse and preventing them from actually being able to transform these food addictions or these, you know, these cravings or whatever they may be. And I find it to be very powerful, because when you give yourself the space to have a bad day, you know, like if there's just one day, you know, you just eat like crap and you don't go to the gym, when you give yourself the space to do that, but also say, you know what, I'm going to let myself be human, and I'm going to have compassion on my journey, but I'm also knowing that tomorrow is a new day, and I'm going to get back to the commitment, and I'm going to keep on, and that's it. You know, just instead of making yourself wrong and beating yourself up, you have an empowering context on it, saying tomorrow's a new day. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely, absolutely. And I'm glad you kind of touched on a point that I wanted to jump into, because, you know, this is a long journey. I mean, again, I'm glad that in the beginning of the show
Absolutely. You
mentioned how long this took. Like, what did you use as motivation to stay the course?
Well, like I said, my dad gave me some motivation. He gave me a lot of motivation. He was one of my biggest support that I had. And in fact, he was one of the biggest inspiration for me to write my book, because he actually passed away from ALS, which is a terminal illness And I devoted like a lot of my life to researching everything I could to find out how I could help him ease into, you know, his process of the progression of the disease. And a lot of the mm-hmm. things that I suggested really helped slow down the progression of the disease. They gave him a 2 to 3 life year expectancy, and he actually lived 10 years. And I credit a lot of it to a lot of the research that I did. And, you know, I went through the cabinets and said, we got to get all this crap out of here, all this questionable ingredients, this all got to go. And he resisted a lot of it, but he's like, you know what, it's my life, you know, I got to do it. So, yeah, I apologize. I kind of sidetracked on the question there.
No, not at all. Listen, I mean, no, you know, that is a motivational factor. I mean, it was that definitely something that you took and looked at as like, well, I can't tell him to do something and I'm not doing it myself too. Was it that, did that come into play as well?
Yeah, it did, because this was in the whole process when I was learning all this myself and sharing everything with, you know, my parents and my family and my friends. So, and it was interesting because I was so on fire for this stuff. I was kind of at some point a little too much about it. You know, I kind of, you know, when you're, it's kind of almost like talking about health and nutrition has gotten to the point with some people where it's almost like talking about politics or religion. And you know,
very
people,
much so.
You know, some people get very offended when you try to say, hey, what are you drinking aspartame soda for? And it's like, I'm just looking out for you, man, you know. That's interesting. But, no, I mean, for the most part, my family and friends and everybody, they were very receptive to everything I was learning and everything that I was teaching them. And, you know, seeing the transformation in me was the only example and the only knowledge that they needed, because it's like the be the change you wish to see concept, you know. It's like I was living what I was trying to have people understand. So that's the best way, I think, for someone to get it. You know what I mean? When they actually see it in front of their eyes and you're not just preaching something to them and really not doing anything about it.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And I know that you are big on putting out the point that you really do feel diets themselves don't work. Does that have to do with that philosophy? Like, you know, it goes around these, like, almost political battle lines? Or do you have a different take on what dieting actually is?
I think dieting has become just this massive income revenue-generating thing nowadays. I mean, every other week, every other day even, you got books being published on the new diet that's going to take over the world, the new diet that's going to transform everybody and anyone. And, you know, diets, the reason that diets don't work, in my opinion, is because there's 7 billion people on the planet, 7 plus billion people on the planet, and there's 7 plus billion different ways of eating and ways of living. Every one of us, every person is unique in that we digest food differently, we assimilate it. We have different organs, we have different ancestry, we have different backgrounds, different genetics. So saying that, for example, saying maybe like a paleo or a raw vegan diet is going to work for the whole world, I think is an invalid statement because of the fact that we are all unique and have different systems, different immune systems, different digestive systems, different, you know, lymphatic, different blood types. And it's really... it makes no sense to me that, you know, we have, and some of these diets, some of these people that write these diet books are so adamant about how, you know, everybody needs to convert to the way of it's almost like they're, you know, it almost does seem like it's religious, you know. It's like, who are you to tell me how I should eat when my body knows better than anybody, any doctor, any nutritionist, any dietitian? You know, our doctor has this innate ability. We're born with this knowing, you know, this energy that to tune in intuitively. Like, our body gives us symbols saying, hey, this food works, this food doesn't, you know, and that's all in the form of symptoms. It's kind of like when you have your car and you see your check engine light come on. So what do we do when that happens? We take our car to the mechanic, they fix it, and we're all good, right? So our body's the same way, right? We get these symptoms, and symptoms are the same thing as a check engine light in the car. It's an analogy. And the symptoms are just there to say, hey, there's something off in your body right now. There's something off somewhere here. You need to pay attention and focus on that and try to, you know, figure out what it is. And a lot of the time people go to the doctor and get medication to alleviate the symptoms. I mean, we see these drug ads all over the place, all over. Talk to your doctor about this, that, that, and this. And all these drugs are doing are covering the symptoms. They alleviate the symptoms. They're designed to do that. That's what they do. They don't cure the problem to begin with. The problem is deep-rooted. A lot of the time that, you know, just covering the symptom doesn't do anything to eliminate the origin of what caused that problem. And it's just, it's crazy how people are so willing to accept that as a solution to the problem, because a lot of the time the medication they're taking to cover the symptom causes other symptoms. And then eventually they need medication for that, those symptoms. And then those cause more symptoms. And then all of a sudden they're on like five different meds just to cover the symptoms from the initial medication that they started with. And it's, I see it happen all the time. I mean, it's especially, you know, in America, we have, you know, this is the, we have the highest rates of obesity in the world. And I think it's like 60% now overweight, or 60% overweight and like 30% are obese in this country. And, you know, a lot of it, you know, it's due to the diet and also, you know, not really listening to those warning lights that come on in our body saying, hey, something's off. You know, you can't just take a pill and forget about it. You know, you kind of have to listen to, you know, the intuitive knowing of what's going on, you know?
No, definitely, definitely. And I think that's a good segue into something else that you're very passionate about, and it's about the broken medical system. Can you talk about how that plays into what you were just describing?
Yeah. It's an area that is another controversial area, and it's kind of, being a health coach, and I'm sure you can identify with what I'm saying too, it's kind of frustrating because I know that health coaching is the progressive solution to a broken medical system we have in this country. And the reason I say that is because doctors not only have very minimal, if any, nutritional training, they don't take the time and spend with each patient getting to know them on a deeper level. That's what's missing. People are not being heard. Like they have, people have like a people have a list of stuff going on with them, and they have maybe 10 seconds, 15 at most, with their doctor to talk about it before they take out their prescription pad and start writing something. And it's like, what is this? You know, what kind of medical care is that? And we pay so much money in this country for insurance and care, and they're just, you know, pulling out the prescription pad, you know, in 20 seconds. It's like, what? That's not a solution. That doesn't occur to me as a solution to people coming in with legitimate problems that they need to talk about, you know? And I'm not necessarily talking about maybe like talking like a psychiatrist or a therapist. I'm talking about just like having a conversation. Like, so you're feeling this way. You're eating this, you know, what's going on? You know, are you in a bad relationship? Do you like your job? Are you happy with your career? Do you have friends? You know, is your social life good? You know, are you practicing your spiritual beliefs, your spirituality? Are you flourishing? Are you creative? Are you embracing and enhancing your creative potential? Those are the kinds of conversations and questions that are not being asked by the doctor, because a lot of the time people have medical issues due to these suppressed things. They're not nurturing their creativity. They're not in healthy relationships. People are not, don't even have a functional healthy relationship with their own body. I mean, you know how many people I see that have dysfunctional relationship with not only their body but their thoughts and their emotions. They don't even know like what's going on in their own self. But yet, you know, a lot of people in the mainstream, you can ask them what is going on with any professional sport team or any celebrity, and they'll tell you every single detail they need to know about it. But when you ask them what's going on with their own body, you get blank stare. And that's what I'm talking about right there. And the big reason is because nobody's listening, and, you know, they don't know who to talk to. So I think that one of the biggest solutions to this broken medical system is people that, you know, listen to this, you know, this, the, what's going on with people, you know, it's just what it's all about is having a conversation, getting to know what's going on with them. And I think it's a powerful thing, you know, and I saw an interview a couple of years ago, and Dr. Oz actually was on, I think, CNN, and he was saying that he was saying the same thing, that health coaches could actually be a tier of our healthcare system, where doctors actually prescribe a health coaching program, or, you know, some kind of wellness coaching regimen with a trained professional to create and set and create goals and work with them to achieve the goal. So you're not taking the place of a doctor. You're more like you're working with them, and you're taking their prescription of being, you know, listened to another level, you know, empowering them to create and reach these goals. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Because it's just, you know, common sense. And I'm glad that you shared your personal story, because I think that's real profound too. It's like you were doing things that were damaging to your body, and unbeknownst to you, you just were kind of reacting to the emotional state that you were in that caused you to eat a certain way. So a lot of people, and it took you years to connect that, and imagine just having somebody who can see the obvious in like 2 seconds. It's almost like you go to a doctor and, you know, and I don't agree with this practice at all, but there is a symptom that they just write the prescription for you. Health coaching and, you know, coaching in general allows the person to actually just be involved in a process where it's like, oh yeah, you know what? That could be because your relationship is this way, or, you know, have you ever tried to substitute this for that? So I definitely agree, and I definitely hope that, you know, down the road, health coaching becomes more popular, more integrated into the system. That would be really, really a helpful thing for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And what you're saying, it's true. Like, my book is basically, in the beginning, I share the weight loss transformation story that I talked about at the beginning of this interview in full detail, and also talk about, you know, the experience with my dad and, you know, what we went through with that in the intro to my book. And then I go into why diets don't work, and then the rest of it is all my health coaching program, basically crammed into like 200 pages. And it's very powerful because of the fact that I took I'm talking like 12 or 13 years of trial and error, of tribulations, of blood, sweat, tears, of, you know, ups and downs, of trying stuff and, you know, experimenting, failing, falling on my face, getting back up. 13 years of all this information crammed into the book. And when my feeling is that when someone reads the words in this book, they'll understand that you can actually go and individually research a lot of the stuff yourself. But the amount of different subjects I cover and the different things that I talk about, it would take years because of me having all this information and me cramming it into this book. So it's actually, it's invaluable, you know, the information in my book, because of me going through all this stuff and me presenting information. And I present the information in the book in a very neutral kind of, here's what I uncovered for myself and it worked. You might want to consider it, or you might not. I mean, I present information that I've uncovered in the last 13 years in a non-biased way for people to make an informed decision, because I feel that right now people are not hearing the truth. They're not getting enough facts to make an informed decision. You know, we're getting the story that the FDA and the USDA and, you know, all the big pharmaceutical companies want us to hear. We're not getting the, you know, the real deal. And having this 13 years of information in the book really takes a lot of the frustration away and a lot of the, you know, the work involved in gaining all this knowledge, because it really is power, you know, knowledge and power. And the more people that are empowered with this knowledge, man, look out, you know, we can start a healthcare revolution and, you know, get people back to nature and back to, you know, nourishing their body like we used to, you know, hundreds of years ago before we had, before we even had medications and had, you know, medical doctors, you know what I'm saying? Well, we used
absolutely
the energies of the earth and the plants and the herbs and stuff, you know, in a natural, in a harmonious way, you know. I mean, so many of the medications that we use today are derived from extracts of herbs and oils, but the reason that our body can't handle them is because they're in super high concentrated doses, you know. So it's just interesting, you know. There's so many different avenues, you know, that anyone can delve into and explore with health and nutrition. It's just crazy.
Yeah, it's an endless rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the rabbit hole is really crazy. And that's why I always tell the audience, listen, get the books of all my guests, you know, because, again, like you just, you know, eloquently put it, you know, that you've given 13 years of experience in, you know, 200, 300 pages. And, you know, like one of my favorite things to always tell people is, like, listen, life's too short to make all the mistakes on your own. So, you know, if Mike made some of those mistakes and he can steer you away from them, you got to listen to Mike. It'll save you a lot of heartache and pain and frustration and, you know, maybe throw you off the course. So definitely go with that, you know, for sure, and take advantage of people who've gone through it and, you know, their knowledge and their wealth of information. You know what I wanted? It was real curious, and I'm sorry I keep harping on this soda thing because I know how I went through it, and I'm sure a ton of people in the audience go through it too. What were some of the things that you just naturally subbed out? So did you replace something, soda with something, or was it a gradual decrease of just consumption? And if you don't even want to talk about the soda per se, was there anything, obviously, with the fast food, for instance, that you like, all right, you know what, I'm not going to have Checkers anymore, I'm going to have this, and we're satisfied with that? Because it's a, you know, not for nothing, soda and water for a lot of people is very difficult to switch out. So I was just curious about that, some of the tactics that you used in that way.
It was more of a crowding out. So what that means is instead of saying I'm eliminating soda and I'm going to drink water, only water, it's not that. It's more of, I'm going to add water into my daily regimen, and I'm going to keep drinking soda, but I'm going to add more water, and I'm going to, you know, increase it as I go, because I really drink water too. So, I mean, it was pretty crazy. So the more water I drank, I noticed that I naturally craved less and less and less soda. So same thing with losing the weight. The more I added exercise in, subtle exercise. I mean, I started a lot, you know, with like walking after eating, you know, dinner. I mean, that's something that anybody can do, even if they have kids. I see people with their strollers and everything. Something so subtle and simple, adding a little bit of physical movement, even 30 minutes after dinner, walking around the neighborhood and, you know, walking around the block or whatever. Just doing that can naturally crowd out some of the other bad habits or bad food choices. You know, say for example, instead of watching an hour of primetime TV, you turn the TV off and you go outside, take a walk or go for a jog or whatever. I just noticed that having that kind of approach instead of restricting things is more more compassionate on the body, and you're able to actually allow yourself to have the space for error. Because we're human, and we're not perfect, and, you know, we err sometimes. We are not, we're not error-free. So having that space, you can actually open up the possibility for things, and I find that to be very powerful. And that's basically, simply put, that's how I approach things, was just add a little bit of good stuff, and eventually, and it did, you know, eventually the bad stuff kind of just was crowded out. And I find that to be true with the clients I work with. And I never tell them, you know, hey, you know, I know you have a list of things that you want to stop eating or you want to stop doing when it comes to your health, but we're not going to just say, let's say you can't have, let's not say that you can't have them. Let's just, you know, add in some good stuff, and naturally the bad stuff starts to fall off. I don't know how it works. I just see it works, and it's pretty interesting that it does. I mean, I don't have any explanation for it, but it's, I think it might have to do with just, I don't know. I mean, I think it might be just the cycle of life. You know, I think our, you know, our body knows what it wants, you know, and when you start nourishing it the way nature intended, you know, the stuff that's artificial, the stuff that's not, you know, the stuff that's damaging just doesn't have its place anymore, and it just falls off the end.
Yeah, no, I definitely, again, equate a lot of things with my soda disaster, and one of the things, like you said, you add more water into your diet, soda actually started getting kind of too sweet for me. And then I was like,
exactly.
You know, I just had to, you know, I started kind of changing my taste buds and, like, things that were, you know, I remember, and I don't know if you had this experience, I don't know if you were a Coke or a Pepsi guy, but I remember for myself, like, I went the opposite direction. I was like, I started with Coke, and it wasn't sweet enough at one point, and I graduated to Pepsi. So I kind of went the other way. When I started adding water, these things started getting too sweet. So I guess, like, there is a natural taste bud kind of change as well that comes along with this, and then you start appreciating different things. But that's just was my kind of experience. But I also, like, you know, I know this is a big thing for you as well. You read a lot of your labels. I should say you read all your labels.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, just give, like, a little bit about that process and how you stumbled upon that, and why is it so important for people to really pay attention to, you know, the labels and the chemicals in your food, and basically its content.
It's imperative because, you know, if you don't know what's in your food, then, you know, you don't know what you're putting in your body. And I have a chapter in my book called "What the Hell Is That? Let's Crash the Chemical Party," and that chapter is dedicated to educating people on the importance of label reading. Not only reading the label, but actually understanding what each ingredient is, where it comes from, you know, what its properties are, or why it's, you know, if it's a chemical, how to identify it if it's a chemical, because, you know, the food manufacturers are very clever. So they can actually get away with marketing a product as trans fat free on the front label, so they can say legally trans fat free or 0 grams of trans fat. So you turn the product over and you look at the ingredients. Now you see in, like, the third or fourth ingredient, you see partially hydrogenated oil. And that's the same thing as it is trans fat. I mean, it's exactly what it is. However, I actually called one of the food manufacturers of one of the well-known products, and I asked them, it was on their comment line. So I asked them, so what's the deal here? You know, you're advertising trans fat free, but yet on the back it says that it has partially hydrogenated cottonseed oil. So their response was, the government allows up to 0.5 grams per serving to be of trans fat to be in a food, and you can still label it as zero. Now, if that's not deception at the highest level, then I don't know what the hell is, because, I mean, that is, like, that's just like a crime. I mean, that's like criminal right there to me, and that sounds like total BS. Like, I can't even begin to explain how frustrating that is to someone that is, you know, just getting into nutrition especially, and seeing a label, you would think, oh, great, it's trans fat free, you know, and knowing that if it's 4 servings, then you're getting up to 1.96 grams of trans fat. You see this craziness? Like, that's insane.
Yeah.
Any amount of trans fat is damaging to the body. So what's interesting about trans fat, since we're talking about that, I just wanted to throw this out there because I find it very interesting. This is one of the coolest facts that I've learned about fats and trans fat especially. Trans fat melts at approximately 111, 112 degrees. So our bodies cannot get that high to burn it off. So what happens is it stores permanently in our cells, and this is the reason for the obesity epidemic in this country right now. The obesity epidemic exploded around the early 1990s because of the fact that they bashed butter to death, and they said, here, drink or eat this this vegetable oil garbage margarine instead. So people become crazy about, you know, butter is terrible, start eating this vegetable oil. The vegetable oil is pure hydrogenated oil, and this stuff does not burn. You can't melt it away. Our body would never get that high. Even if we have a fever of 105 degrees, you're about to, you know, go into, you know, convulsions at that point. You're not going to burn this fat off. Butter, on the other hand, has a melting point of 55 to 60 degrees. Our body is at 98.6. It doesn't take much math to figure out who's, you know, what propaganda they're trying to, you know, pull on us. You know, it's like, who do they think we are? You know, I mean, it's like, this was before the internet, so they knew that they could get away with this kind of stuff. But now we have an amazing tool for research at our fingertips, and they can't do anything about it. You know, you just can go research anything, and find out, you know, all the lies, all the propaganda that they've been exposing to us all these years. It's all collapsing. All the medical system is collapsing. It really is, because they're losing their grip on something that they know that people are becoming awakened to. And it's kind of cool to see, because I actually see the shift in people now. I can actually see the thirst and the wanting for this information, because people are becoming aware that they've been lied to all these years and they're tired of it, you know, and I am too. And I'm glad to see this happening. It's a really interesting time. It's an awesome time to actually live in right now, to see this, you know, happen.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's a beautiful thing. And you know what the thing is, too? It's like a lot of people, I remember growing up, and, you know, I think we were probably around the same age, and you, like you did refer in, you know, the 90s and how these things have, like, exploded. And, you know, I generally believe that people do what they're told and they want to do the right thing. And I think that they did follow these diets and they did eliminate butter. They did all these things, and nothing's more frustrating than to do something and expect results and you don't get it. So
that's kind of what
people are like looking at. Now they say, okay, let me do some research. Let me see. And they're doing little changes and they're getting great results. And that's why it's like really cool. And that's why I think I have to agree with you as far as, you know, the health system is definitely on its heels at this point, and they're, you know, it's a great, great time to be a part of it. You know, it's amazing.
Mhm. Yeah, it's interesting to see. I'm curious to see what, you know, where it's going to go. I mean, other countries are very much open to holistic approaches, you know, naturopathic doctors and, you know, healers. A lot, you know, like, for example, in India, their medical system is Ayurvedic medicine. You know, it's been practiced for like 5,000 years, and that's their primary approach to health is their Ayurvedic medicine. And that uses herbs, oils, it uses the energies of the bodies and all that kind of thing. And they actually get to know the patients, which is interesting. You know, think about the population of India. I mean, there's like a billion people there, and the doctors can still actually sit down with their patient. It's like, okay, we only have 300 plus thousand in America, and we don't even get 20 seconds with our doctor before they whip out their, you know, their prescription pad. Like,
yeah,
crazy.
It is crazy. It's just a different world. And again, you know, the results are the proof that it's working, you know, like that they're able to sustain their health in the old school way of doing things. And, you know, we're here getting sicker and sicker. So.
It's interesting. We have the most advanced technological devices, I think, ever. And we have one of the, you know, worst health in the country, in the world. It's like out of the, you know, first world developed countries. It's just bizarre to me that's a fact, you know what I mean? It's like, how is that possible? It doesn't make sense.
No, yeah. It really doesn't. Now, you know what, Mike, you're obviously a great guest, because I can't believe how much time has passed on our show, and we haven't talked about the topic that kind of brought us together here. Just so the audience know, we're both health coaches, and we're both into, obviously, the health and well-being of all of humanity, but we are kind of unique because we're very, very small as far as representing the totality of this movement. basically, just so the audience knows, there's not enough men out there doing this kind of work. So, Michael, what is wrong with men? Why are we so resistant to these ideas? And why are most of our clients women? Why are women taking all of the attention and they're running with this? They're doing a wonderful job, but what's up with the guys?
I honestly, that's a very interesting question, and I often ask that myself. My only logical explanation is that it's more geared towards women. I mean, if you look, like, for example, the yogic community, I mean, there's a lot more men now, but, I mean, if you look, like, 10 years ago, the yoga community was, like, 99% women. And same thing with energy healing. If you're into energy healing, if you go to any Reiki class or any hands-on energy healing class, I've been to several, and I'm, like, the only guy there. Or if you go to any, like, spiritual classes that I've gone to, I was, like, the only guy, or maybe one other. And I don't know what it is. I think it's just, honestly, it's my intuitive way to answer that would be that because I think women have a direct connection with the earth because of the childbearing process, I think that may be why it resonates more with women. And men are, you know, more logic-minded. You know, the women have the abstract thinking, the understanding of life and spirituality. I think that women have a better understanding of it than men because of the fact that they have that connection to earth. That is my only logical explanation for that. It's not an excuse for men to, you know, to say, oh, that's all dumb and stupid or whatever, I'm not going to partake in it, or that's, you know, girly or whatever. But I see what you're saying, and it is kind of frustrating for me, but there are actually a lot more men that are doing this. And what's interesting to me is that my clients have told me that they would rather work with a man than a woman because they're more comfortable. And I find that interesting, and you would think that'd be the other way around. And
that's your female clients, Mike?
Correct. Yes, I apologize. My female clients, a couple of them, have said that. And I found it to be interesting because I had it in my mind that women would be scared to work with a man, you know, as a personal trainer or a health coach. But they're like, no, actually, a couple of my clients have told me, you know, that they feel very comfortable. And especially because they know that I went through the ups and downs and the health transformation of being, being 100 pounds overweight, you know. And I think that might have something to do with it, because a lot of the wellness and fitness and spiritual communities, you see, you know, it's almost like a stereotype of the type of person that you think you see there. Like, I think men might be scared to try to go to a yoga class because they think that it's like all, you know, really skinny women in the class or something, you know. I can understand, you know, that concept, because it appears that way sometimes. But I also see how things are evolving, and it's actually starting to even out a little bit more. I mean, it's still definitely lopsided, but I think the more awareness that we bring as men into this field, that more men will be more open and receptive and willing to, you know, to delve into this. You know what I'm saying?
I want to say yes, you know, but I'm not sure. It's like,
yeah.
I know that there's an increase, you know, like, and again, maybe it's just my frustration for, like, really wanting to. I think men are the key to this now, because I think the women have this lockdown, and I think that they're really open to it. They're pushing forth, like, their things. But again, what happens too is, like, the women who have their mates and, you know, their husbands and their boyfriends who are resistant to this, now they're kind of doing double work. So, you know, I'm almost, like, scared that they're going to fall off to track too, because the guys are just, like, holding up the party now. Like, it's like, you know, and I can see that, you know, like, I can see, just even, you know, being a big football fan like that I am, it's like, you know, every commercial is about garbage, food, Doritos, you know, crappy beer and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And again, I partake in all that. And it's almost like I said, they packaged this product for men to be like the Homer Simpsons and, you know.
I was just going to say, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, the Peter Griffiths of the world. Like, you know, the guy is supposed to be overweight. He is supposed to be like a doofus, you know, like he's that's like kind of the image that we get, and they drink beer and eat wings all day. It's an interesting thing. And, you said that you're like, how did you get into yoga?
I got into yoga. Funny that you ask, through my wife. She, mm-hmm. she totally got me involved in it. And, first time I went, I couldn't do half of the class. And it was I do hot yoga is because you sweat like crazy. And my belief is that when you sweat like that, you release toxins. And, your skin is a big organ. So, you know, you release the toxins and it just feels incredible. I've done other yoga, but I always go back to hot because I just feel amazing after. But she got me into it, and I loved it, and I felt amazing, and it really, the heat really opens my my body up, and I'm able to, like, get in deep into the poses and everything. But, my wife got me into it. So, and like I said, you know, I'm seeing more men in the classes nowadays, so it's a good thing. But I get what you're saying completely. You know, the whole character that they've created around men, that they're, you know, they sit around and watch TV and, you know, like you said, eat wings and watch football. But, you know, it's just garbage. It's just this programming that we have. And I think most powerful things that men or anybody could do is to turn off the TV and leave the TV off. That's actually one of my steps in the book is to start turning the TV off more often and turn on your creativity, because in that creativity is where we can actually bridge the gap between male and female. Because right now, as it appears, I think the whole logic-minded male mentality needs to get more in touch with that creative, abstract, kind of out there mind. You know, when we tie the two together, when you tie the abstract creative with the logical mind, we create a synergy of just like beautiful balance. And that's like the whole male, female, yin yang meshing together. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot more of that is going on right now. Men are embracing their creativity more, and women are actually getting into the logic world more, and it's a really cool synergy going on.
No, yeah, definitely. Yeah, you definitely could see that. The more that you're like in this work, you definitely see that transformation happening. But
right,
like, we could talk all night. Like I said, you have so much information that you have in this book, and so much other things to offer. I just want to give you the floor for like a couple of minutes to just, you know, tell the audience how to get in touch with you. Your social media platforms and your website and how to get your book and any parting words that you might have for the guests. For the audience.
Yeah, cool. I really appreciate you having me on the show, though. It's been a great, great experience, and I love, you know, talking about this. As you said, we can talk all day, but if anybody is interested in the conversation that I've had this evening, you can reach me at my website. It's transformative-nutrition.com. Through my website, you can actually connect with me on any social media platforms. I'm on Facebook, Twitter. I also have a LinkedIn as well. And I have a blog and tons of articles on my website. And on my website, you can find my book there. So anything and everything that you need to connect with me or find on me is on the website. And that's transformative-nutrition.com. And I just want to end my conversation with saying that I think the most powerful thing that I can say to anybody is to listen to their body. Listen to your body, because it knows. It has a knowing. It has an intuitive understanding of what foods work for you, what foods don't, what thoughts, emotions, and feelings are going to help you to understand what it's going to take to get to the health goals, to the life goals. I mean, this isn't just a conversation about life. I mean, about health. It's about life and everything having to do with what makes us whole and complete. Because if one area is missing, then all the other areas start to become imbalanced. And once we understand that concept, then we can understand the holistic connection of how we are all, you know, one being. And that's the most powerful thing that I can share.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Very well put. Very well put. Well, Mike, thanks for being an awesome guest. Really appreciate you being on the show, and just want to wish you good luck with this book. And, you know, we definitely want to hear from you. Anything you have coming out, just give us a call, and, you know, we'll get you back on the show. You were a great guest.
Awesome. I look forward to being back on the show, actually, and I wish you much success. And I just want to acknowledge you for the work that you do as well. And, you know, you're an awesome coach, and just keep on getting the men off their butts into the gym, man. And, you know,
I don't know, man. I gotta keep fighting. I gotta keep fighting the fight. So I have to have some faith. I'm just a little down right now.
Yeah. Well, you got another player on your team right here. So
good. Yeah. No. Like I said, I'm very happy we crossed paths, because, like I said, any guy who's in this field who can spread some knowledge about this and help me recruit, I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Well, you have a good night, Mike. And again, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much, man. Take care.
You too. That was Michael Temez. Listen, this guy lost 100 pounds. 100 pounds. You got to see his pictures, his before and after pictures. Awesome. Definitely check out his book. Definitely go to his website. Like I said, this guy has a lot of stuff that's going on. And you know what? Again, just for the guys out there who listen, we need more guys in this field. You know, we have to represent as far as getting our health and wellness up to speed. I know a lot of us do fall off the wagon and sometimes don't get back on. But you just listen to a story like Michael, who had an incident in his life that really made him fall down a bad path and was able to just get back up, get into the gym, get his life together, stop drinking the soda, stop eating the fast foods, and all of a sudden, this guy lost 100 pounds, you know. So it could be done, you know. That's a message for everyone in the audience. Again, Michael Temez, and you know, I'll have my blog up about him, and we'll talk about him a little bit, you know, over the next couple of days on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and all that, and just get an opportunity to take a look at his work. Very, very inspirational. This is Omar Kermabash from the Wellness Ultimatum Radio Show. Next week's guest is going to be along these lines. He's going to be a personal trainer. We're going to have a surprise for you. We're going to keep it on the health and wellness tip for a couple of sessions, and then we're going to, you know, sprinkle in our mindset stuff as well. Listen, everybody, thanks again for listening. It's always appreciated, and you have a good night.